Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I think this organic movement that has cropped up all over the country.
This is healthy.
They are touching a nerve.
God bless them for their spontaneity. It's an independent people coming.
What we're seeing on the streets of New York is an expression of democracy.
We understand their frustration.
That it's about freedom of speech, the right to assemble.
We applaud their activism.
And the message of the protesters is a message for establishment every place.
I think it expresses the frustrations that the American people feel.
This is freedom. This is America. This is something we ought to celebrate.
And the protesters are giving voice to a more broad-based frustration.
It's young, it's spontaneous, it's focused, and it's going to be effective.
Dungaree doll, paint your initials on my...
So now that the Democrats own the vermin in the gutters... It's Eddie Fisher, by the way. I don't understand this Natalie Wood thing, other than to cover up Solyndra. Who in the heck figured out to dig up Natalie Wood's grave and make this a story today, other than Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, CBC, CNNBC, Reuters? How in the heck is that a story? Who is it who decides these things? You've got the most scandal-ridden administration in American history. Not since a Peruvian dictatorship have we seen a country so enmeshed in lies and deceit, awash in money to cronies, crony capitalism, crony socialism. I've never seen anything like it. So every day, the other day, Sandusky, so that's already burnt itself out. Now he's innocent. Now they're on to Natalie Wood. They're disinterred her from the grave, the watery grave. So now that numerous Democrat leaders have publicly praised the Occupy Wall Street movement, how badly do you think this will affect the Democrats in 2012? My answer, not at all, because Newt Gingrich is running. Now, Newt Gingrich, as you well know, is surging in some poll in Iowa. Of course, I pay no attention to it, but I guess since I'm in the media, I have to pay attention to it. Especially since Newt Gingrich was the subject of one of my early books, The Political Zoo. He was one of many where I took political and media figures and gave them the persona of animals and gave them a pseudo-Latin name. So Newt Gingrich at the time was known as Spinellus Cavinian, the Georgia Gopak tick, Spinellus Cavinian. That's a Latin binomial. And I'm going to actually read it for you later so that you understand that he's not new to my thinking. I mean, it comes out that he took money from Freddie, $1.2 million as a consultant, which he claims was to act as a historian. if he was a coach. Okay, let's say Sandusky was only showering and horsing around. But now Newt Gingrich says he was acting as a historian to Freddie. He didn't really want the money for any other reason. He wasn't lobbying. The guy is a well-known lobbyist. How is he surging in the polls? Answer. You want the answer in three words? 999. That's how he's surging in the polls. How is he surging in the polls? Perry's blanking out. How is he surging in the polls? Romney's liberalism. How is he surging in the polls? Because there's nobody else. Now, I know I'm going to get the Ron Paul callers. Don't call because we're not going to talk about it. He's unelectable. His ideas are good, some of them. Some of them are total crackpot. And he's unelectable. No one's voting for an old white man versus the young, vigorous Barack Obama. That's all there is to it. You know, you're just not going to get elected. You got to understand, a lot of this is pure personality, nothing to do with ideas. In fact, the better your ideas, the worse chance you have in America. So there it is. There's Occupy. On my website, I defined what the Occupy group was. And that's a link up of Democrats, the Democrats plus unions. Well, go read it. I don't even remember already. But here's what's going on while you're paying attention to the rats in the gutters of New York and other places with tents. A few Marines put up a cross to honor former Marines who had died. Right? They put up a cross. A group of backstabbing atheists objected to the cross, and the military is now investigating the former Marines for putting up a cross at Camp Pendleton. I swear to God, I'm not making this up. I'm not making it up. Former Marines carried the 13-foot cross up a steep hill, and they were accompanied by the widows and children of the fallen Marines. Yet these rats, these dirty, stinking atheist vermin, who should be run out of the country on a rail, had the nerve. This Jason Torpy, president of the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers, said that the cross is a violation of the constitutional separation of church and state. As far as I can see, Obama is a violation of the constitutional separation of honesty from deceit. As far as I can tell, Nancy Pelosi is a violation of the constitutional separation of liars from honest people. And they're attacking Marines who put up a cross at Camp Pendleton? And the Marines are actually investigating the Marines who put up the cross? Here's what they said. Camp Pendleton legal authorities are researching and reviewing the issue in order to make a judicious decision, said Lieutenant Ryan Finnegan to Fox News. As Marines, we are proud, blah, 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 but we want to make sure that the use is appropriate for doing this in a correct manner to protect the sentiment from question, blah, 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 blah. How could this happen? The Marines died to protect America, not to protect atheists. And the radical atheists are attacking the U.S. military any way they can. This shows the hostile environment that's been created by these left-wing radicals who hate religion and hate the military. There's nothing you could say about this. Don't call me about it. I'm not asking you to call. So instead of all of this, we have to talk about Natalie Wood. Natalie Wood, who nobody remembers. I would suspect that perhaps 1% of the population even knows the name. And yet it became a featured story on the news today at the same time that the Georgia GOPAC tick surged in some poll in a diner in Iowa, which again became headline news. So in order for you to understand that I'm not a fan of Newt Gingrich and why, I turn the clock back to 2006 to my book, The Political Zoo. It's not even available for sale, so I don't think I'm hawking a book. I've written a lot of books, yes. I'm a brilliant man, and the way I express myself is both verbal and in the written form. I'm just very prolific, and each book is better than the one before it. And although you can't buy the book, you must understand that my description of Newt Gingrich is classic. Let me start it so you don't think I'm just talking. Newt Gingrich, Spinellus Cavinian. Those of you who went to high school and remembered there were binomials or two Latin names for each animal, genus, species, and for each plant, that's the way it's done. Like Katie Couric was known as Perkiannoius. That might help you figure out what I'm talking about. Let's see some other people who are in there. So you don't think I'm just picking on Newt Gingrich. Let's see. At that time, there were other people around. Kofi Annan is gone. Bono is gone. He's finished. Here, Barbara Boxer was known as the California Cacklehen, who was indigenous to Brooklyn, New York, but regularly migrates to the left coast after maturation, where it can better peck itself up the food chain. And her binomial was California Cackless. That's funny. Now, if you think that it was all about Democrats, you're wrong. George W. Bush was picked on. The Texas Bumblebee, he was called, and his Latin name was Stingus Bumblus. The Texas Bumblebee was transplanted from the East Coast, where it evolved into a hardier, more persistent species. Its natural enemies, like the donkey, are constantly underestimating the bee's sting. They think that a good swat or two should dispatch this gritty little bumblebee to oblivion, and even after repeated stings, they refuse to learn their lesson. That was pretty good. I actually did it in a way that I complimented him. Hillary Clinton, another wonderful person, who I named the Limber Leopard, and her Latin binomial was Peronista Manipulatus. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Oh. My advice as a historian, when they walked in and said to me, we are now making loans to people who have no credit history and have no record of paying back anything, but that's what the government wants us to do, as I said to them at the time, this is a bubble. This is insane.
Wow, that's brilliant. That's brilliant, Newton. You got $1 million for that. I said it for nothing here on the show. I didn't need a grant from Freddie to say that, Newt. What'd you take their money for if they were so bad? Real honest guy. I turn it off already. I'm not in a rock and roll mood. I'm in a weird mood. It's pre-Thanksgiving already. I'm not focused. The country's in hell. The president has escaped. They sent him to Bali while the country almost burned to the ground with these lunatics spreading disease in the major cities. It took Bloomberg 2 months, finally, to do something. Now he's considered a bold leader. Here in San Francisco, they don't quite know what to do yet. Scabies, fleas, lice are spreading in the city, but they're trying to figure it out right now. Busy dividing up the spoils of the tax base. So now the GOPAC tick is surging. Newt Gingrich, Spinalis Cavinian. Let me read you a little bit about what I wrote about him then and see if you disagree or agree. The Georgia GOPAC tick is a hard-shelled but soft-headed pest that sustains itself by sucking the blood out of any organism that will increase the tick's much-desired power drive. It gains natural advantages through its seeming intelligence and clever concealment of weaknesses. While the GOPAC tick aggressively latches on to any available host it can find, including prospective mates, it quickly retreats at the sight of organized resistance or the onset of illness. Promised a contract for America, instead gave us a contract on America. Like a Trojan horse, the GOPAC tick can change colors with the landscape and recently struck a deal with the limber leopard, seeing she will likely be the next power on the throne. That was pretty prescient. Several sightings of this rare tick have been reported recently in both Iowa and New Hampshire, perennial breeding grounds for pests of all sorts. This tick is also known to spread numerous diseases, including severe dysenteria and acute apotheosis. That's my summary of Newt Gingrich back in 2006. So if you want to read it, I can read it to you. It's sad because it's so true. I can read you the whole thing. It's exactly a repeat of history we're living through right now. I'll read you a little in the middle of it. They say Henry Clay was the great compromiser, but that was long before Gingrich. The tick, who upon encountering real resistance caved in faster than a punctured lung. I'm sorry. The GOPAC tick, we found out, is the kind of eager parasite that could have struck a deal with Pol Pot. Very well, you can beat us, shackle us, and make us dig our own graves, just as long as we get to stay in your fine capital city. That's our final offer. In less time than it takes George W. Bush to read an issue of Ranger Rick, the Republican Revolution of 1994 withered into history, leaving about as much lasting impression as the Disco Revolution of 1974. Once the Republicans faltered, public confidence waned, and with the impeachment procedures that followed, GOPAC's once loyal constituents grew weary of the flea circus. Democrats actually gained seats from the Republicans in the impeach or not to impeach 98 election. All of these maneuvers merely revealed the true colors of this blood-hungry biter, an insect whose principles proved as soft and swollen as his gut. Even in the early days of his congressional career, the tick's character was suspect. He was rumored to prey on his female staff members. Those rumors grew when this insect, apparently not wanting to suck any chemo with the blood, divorced his first wife while she was recovering from cancer. It's harsh, I admit it. But sarcasm is certainly a form of political satire, isn't it? Lovely, Gingrich. Why don't you pay a visit to the local orphanage and kick some kids in the shins while you're at it? The same deranged scenario repeated itself immediately after Gingrich stepped down as Speaker and left the House. He announced his divorce to his second wife right after she'd been diagnosed with MS. He left her for a congressional aide 23 years his junior. Even in his love life, the GOPAC tick is dangerous, bleeding his partner to the point of disease, then moving on to another host. Forget Time's Tick of the Year. The man deserves the Woody Allen Award for his cold dexterity in betraying and praying. Oh, God, that's cruel, Michael. Now, I know full well that only he who is without sin should swat that first pest. Don't get me wrong here. I don't want to smash this tick to extinction. I just want him to shut up and go away, but he won't. He keeps turning up looking for fresh blood. Although Gingrich is a private tick again, he has been nearly as pesky as Jimmy Carter. No, forgive me, not quite that pesky. No one is that pesky. While Gingrich rightly criticized the State Department in a recent speech, saying that bureaucrats there were undercutting the president's foreign policy, that was then, remember that, his attack had been coordinated and approved by Bush administration officials beforehand. There's that pesky GOPAC tick again doing the White House's dirty work. Any White House's, that's the rub. This tick doesn't want to fly in his own power. He wants to fly in Air Force One. Recently, he aligned himself with Hillary Clinton on health care and national security issues, effectively moderating the credentials of a woman he once painted to the left of Mao. She hasn't changed, Gingrich. It's you, bro. Which reminds me, you know how every time you come in from the woods, you check for ticks? That's what I do every time I come back from Washington. I check for newts. You just never know who he'll latch onto next. So let me go back to the beginning of this book where I quote John Dryden from 1681 for those of you who have a literary bent. The true end of satire is the amendment of vice by correction. And he who writes honestly is no more an enemy to the offender than the physician to the patient when he prescribes harsh remedies to an inveterate disease. So forgive me my diagnosis and forgive me my cure. But the fact of the matter is, the country is suffering from a disease, the disease of lifetime politicians like Newt Gingrich. Now, if you think I only attacked Newt Gingrich, you're wrong in the political zoo. There were many others, and some of whom are still around bothering us, such as Jimmy Carter, Marxist peanut farm era. And so I think that instead of reading more from the book, I'll just read you some of the key points of some of the characters. Jimmy Carter was known as the big-toothed muskrat, a particularly nasty rodent that, while indigenous to the southeastern United States, is known to appear as an endemic type in San Francisco, Boston, Manhattan, Austin, and as far north as Toronto, Canada, i.e. wherever socialists of the species gather. So you see, I've been at this for quite a while, using phrases that had not been used before me in the popular media by those who call themselves conservative. Jimmy Carter, I named Marxist peanut farm era. Very clever. How about Hugo Chavez, soon to join his friends across the river Hades? Thick-headed Leninista. This cold-blooded and calculating amphibian is the largest and most deadly of South America's predators. Extremely poisonous, the oily armored toad resembles a common frog, but gets its name for its preference to wallow in oil than swim in water, which explains its greasy appearance and its ability to slip out of tight situations. Hugo Chavez, Thick-headed Leninista. Well, ladies and gentlemen, what do you think? How do you say delicious in Cuban?
Savage.
Yeah, remember that sound from my show back in the early days? And we are approaching Thanksgiving, where our trains come to mind, family. I see the audience already. Half of them are gone for the week. The economy's so bad, how come the restaurants are so full? I don't understand that. If the economy's so bad, how come the restaurants are packed? The roads are full of new cars. People are on vacation already. How does this work? I don't know. What is there, like two societies that I'm living in? I'm going to ask you a question on the Savage Nation. Do you want me to continue reading from the political zoo, being sarcastic or satirizing politicians and media figures? Because most of you never heard of the book. Or do you want me to do something else? It's open mic to Mike at the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Really, I'll work for you. We'll work for food. We'll work for you. We'll work for food. So to just show you one last one for the moment, I did both sides of the aisle, liberal and conservative, which virtually no one else could say they did back in those days. This is how I established my independent credentials. And in the political zoo, the satire of these various figures, I satirized Boxer Bush, Jimmy Carter, James Carville, Hugo Chavez, Dick Cheney, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, George Clooney, Katie Coran Couric, Maureen Dowd, Dianne Feinstein, Newt Gingrich, Ruth Gator Ginsburg, Rudy Giuliani. Where is he, by the way? How come he hasn't thrown his glasses in the ring? Al Gore, Jesse Jackson, Kim Jong-il, John Kerry, Larry King, Rush Limbaugh, Bill Maher, John McCain, Bill O'Reilly. That's why he never forgave me. It's why I'm banned on Fox News. He has the worst temper in the entire media, according to people who know him. The meanest of all of them is O'Reilly. No humor whatsoever. I mean, they claim liberals have no humor. This guy has never forgiven me for a few things I said about him. All I do is call him a leprechaun. Big deal, Bill. Sheesh, Bill. All I said was lecherous leprechaunus. I mean, what was so bad about that, Bill? Bill O'Reilly was known as top mammal in the Fox News pundit cage, the American porcupine being a large terrestrial rodent well protected by its prickly exterior. Ooh. And his Latin binomial was Lecheris leprechaunus. When challenged, it erects its quills, swings its stout tail, and threatens to release the barbed tips into challenger skin. Known for its grunting or groaning delivery, the porcupine is active mainly at night and is found occasionally on televisions in the sagebrush plains of the West. Also, according to legal filings that were settled, the American porcupine will occasionally try to find cable station staff willing to play games like fetch the loofah as part of its bizarre mating ritual. So that's why you never see Michael Savage on, you know, that talk show. They bring up talk shows you never heard of. Never Michael. It doesn't matter anymore. I'm too far advanced in my career for it to matter. So you could see why the O'Reilly factor runs the station. But until then, a word of warning to all you ladies out there in the Savage Nation, I wrote. If you phone O'Reilly's show during porcupine mating season, which lasts from about January to December, do your best to sound like Janet Reno, avoid the subjects of Greek food and cleansing devices, and above all, steer clear of the porcupine's biggest turn-on, namely himself. Oh! A porcupine in heat is a dangerous beast. If he loves you, you'll be able to count the ways. If he loves you, I haven't read this in years. If he loves you, you'll be able to count the ways. In fact, you'll be able to count them by the thousands while you pluck them the morning after. Oh, come on, Bill. Have a sense of humor. Don't be like Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton. Nancy Pelosi was known as, let's see, leftist irrationalis. Nancy Pelosi, leftist irrationalis. With its large beak and small head, the distempered rainbow parakeet. Ooh. The distempered rainbow parakeet caws with great frequency and volume, yet lacks mental capacity to emit anything original or intelligent. Fortunately, the bird has developed an adaptation that helps it to cope with this problem. The beak's large upper mandible is notched for its little bird foot to fit in. Decked with bright blue plumage, the female of the species mates for life, usually with strong and crafty males, capable of building large nests and stashing a surplus of fruits and nuts therein. Not only does this preserve the pair from want, but also frees the female to spend nearly all of its waking hours bobbing through the jungle, screeching at any animals not of its flock, and pretending to care about those that have no nests and food at all. Although its original habitat was Maryland, the breed has since migrated to the San Francisco Bay Area, where it aggressively climbed the political pecking order. Today it can be found both in California and Washington, D.C., chirping away mindlessly in either environs. Curiously, aside from its lower-than-average intelligence, the parakeet suffers from one prominent congenital disability. It is only capable of flapping about in circles, primarily because it is born with only a left wing. Nobody has ever written anything better than this. Political satire in our time. Sean Penn, pesky apologista. Native to the left coast, the big-beaked toucan is a colorful and perpetually ill-tempered bird of paradise, born and bred in the protected environs of Hollywood. But unlike most toucans, this one is strangely compelled to migrate to war zones and disaster areas. While adverse to the glare of flashbulbs, hence the bird's notoriety for striking out at photographers, the big-beaked toucan can deftly mimic the dove when in front of television news cameras. This particular breed of toucan gets its name from its decidedly large beak, perfect for tracking down bad scripts and sticking that giant proboscis where it doesn't belong. Not bad. Sean Penn, the toucan tough guy, has a long history of appearances in cinema. It's pretty good. I'm not going to read it all to you. Yes or no? Keep it up or not? What would you like to hear? Houston, Texas. Jared, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, who do you like?
Well, they're all, none of them are living.
Oh, gosh. I mean, if you do the zoo, and you had to identify...
Wait a minute. See, this is an interesting question. Must I like any of the Republican candidates? Is it a requirement?
No. But there's got to be someone...
In other words, I'm a commentator. Remember that. I'm only a commentator. And my job is to be a pain in the you-know-what for the political class. It doesn't matter what side of the aisle they're on. That's my job. Now, the truth is 80% of the criminals are Democrats. 20% of them are Republicans, and they're all bad in that regard. But that doesn't mean I have to give one group a pass because they're not Democrats. The Democrats are virtually all corrupt. Every one of them is a corrupt socialist, without exception. I don't know of a single exception. With Republicans, there's probably, I don't know, a good percentage of them who are honest men. But a lot of them are louts, total louts and criminals, just like their Democrat colleagues, which is why nothing changes in Washington, which is a good thing, actually. It's actually a good thing because more or less the restaurants are still full. People are going away for vacation. Most of us could go around without guns in our hand. And so you see, we almost had an insurrection in America, and that's why they got the master chef out of the country during that that period of time. He's still in Bali now, right? He's over in Bali eating, what's he eating? Queen of the fried food. Don't tell me it's Iowa again. I can't take it. First of all, I never met anyone from Iowa. That's number one. How do they know what's good? Why do I care what a bunch of fat farmers in Iowa think about the election? How did this happen? This goes back to the 18th century when Iowa was important. I don't understand how they get away with this. Hundreds of years later, they're telling us that a few obese farmers in a diner in Iowa, have you ever see those people? They're going to tell me who's going to be the next president, and if they can, what does that tell you about the election? If a few fat farmers in Iowa can predict who's going to be the next president, what does that tell you about the government you have? Everything. Tucson, Arizona. Brent, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I was just wondering what Teddy will be doing for Thanksgiving this year.
That's not a bad question. Everybody wants to know Teddy's comings and goings. So let's start with what he's doing for Thanksgiving. Teddy is going with Dad to all the family's going to be together for the first time in a long time. Son, daughter, in-laws, all in one house, all for Thanksgiving. And it's making me very happy, to be very honest with you. I'm gonna, the word happy doesn't have any meaning to me. A good feeling in me, okay? I want to be together. It's my favorite holiday of the year. So we're all going to be together. I don't know if Teddy can be there, though. I haven't worked this out because they have a dog who's a little aggressive. He has to wear a muzzle, and he's much bigger than Teddy. I really haven't figured this out yet. But I don't know about a Thanksgiving without my dog. You know, that's a problem. But if he has to stay with a dog sitter, okay, we'll do that for the day. I'll bring him home turkey or whatever, right?
Yes.
But it's going to be a nice day. You know, what you do, you eat, then you walk around the street. You pick the hood up of your old Cadillac and show it to an in-law. You know, that kind of thing. You know, you look at engines. What else are you going to do? It's fun. It's American. You see the other families, the normal families together, which is nice. I like looking at the other families on the street. It's a pleasure. This is so opposite to the vermin in Occupy. Although many of them have gone home for the holidays. You know, it's Thanksgiving break for the college brats who are camping out. You notice the tents are mainly all gone because they got Thanksgiving break came the next day. They timed it to coordinate with Thanksgiving break. They never study anyway. They take courses such as women's studies, ethnic studies, you know, that kind of thing. Environmental studies, all meaningless fields. Any other questions?
Years ago, you told a story about the men in the family would consider it a good meal if they all got so stuffed they just hurt.
They all passed away very young, but it's true. That's how men ate in those days. God, you're going back 10 years, Brent.
Yes. Yes, I'm
alone. Okay, I'll tell the story again because it is around the holiday times, and nobody wants to hear my brilliant satire. This shows you if you stick to the low road, you get a bigger audience. Anytime you go to the high road, the 99% of your audience leaves you. You can't do it. You cannot. It's pennies for Beethoven. What can I tell you? You want to tell that story again? Okay, I'll tell that story again. So once upon a time in the United States of America, many years ago, there was a thing called family, and the family consisted of a mother and a father, and usually the father went to work and the mother stayed home, and she was known as a homemaker, and she kept that home perfectly, and the children always had someone to come home to, and there was always a hot meal, and the beds were clean, and everybody was kept straight up, and that was America. That was the America I grew up in. So when the holidays would come around, the family members obviously would get together, and it was usually in my house because my mother loved to entertain and cook, God rest her soul. I know she's in heaven cooking for God. I just know that. Positive. I don't know what cuisine he likes, but whatever he likes, I know she's in the kitchen. So her favorite thing was to prepare for a week ahead, maybe 2 weeks ahead. She'd start getting all the ingredients and the dishes and lay them out. And it always made me feel good, as I was still going to school the week before Thanksgiving, to see all of the holiday dishes not exactly laid out in the way they were going to be for the night of the Thanksgiving, but kind of lined up, taken out of the cabinets. It always made me know, you know, it was like building up. It was like a theater in the house. It was a little house. The house was 20 feet wide. The lot was 100 feet deep. It was an attached brick house in Queens, New York on Utopia Parkway. And that's upstairs you had three little bedrooms and one bathroom. And downstairs you had a half a bathroom. My mother could turn out a dinner for 25 people on a four-burner electric stove. She didn't have the $2 million kitchen from Westchester or Tiburon that nobody cooks in. You go to a house today, a $1 million kitchen, the latest in the, this appliance, the Gaggenau this. You can gag on the food they make there because they don't make any food. Gaggenau, Schmaggenau, every convenience. Triple refrigerators in the pantry and there's nothing in it but a Diet Coke and a bottle of vodka. But in those days, my mother had one refrigerator in which she could prepare. So anyway, so to make a long story short, we'd all come over. The men would come, the uncles, the this, the that. And they'd eat. Like, eat and talk, and everybody would be... You'd have to walk around the dining table. It was such a small dining room that you risked castration if you try to... If you didn't bend back, like, as you were passing a chair, you risked serious injury to your male parts. So you were constantly, like, you know, having to bend over. Then you'd hit your head against the women's, like, sprayed hair. It was crazy, but it was wonderful. So after the meal, the menfolk would retire to the small living room, which consisted of a large sofa and about four armchairs, you know, in this place. And they would all lean back gagging from the amount of food that they ate. Because if they weren't going, oh, God, and they would slightly open their belt and they would just let their stomachs kind of, you know, expand. See, this is the beauty of the Middle Eastern costume. The Middle Eastern men have it down pat. They wear robes, man. So they don't have to unleash their belt. They eat a big meal. No one knows what they ate. They didn't eat for a few days. Nobody knows they didn't. Anyway, so in our society, we wear belts. Probably one of the most barbaric costuming devices ever invented, a belt for a man. It makes him conscious of his stomach, and it hurts you. It compresses your... So the men would sit there gagging and moaning, oh, like, you know, that kind of thing. Now, I know I'm not alone in this because I know many, many people are laughing right now, because they grew up in exactly the same kind of situation, because the object of a holiday was to stuff yourself until you were in pain. Now, that's all gone. It's true. It's good it's gone, because eating like that is very unhealthy. It's far better to have a tofu turkey and talk about Occupy Wall Street and the meaning of it and how significant it was and how it brought about change for a betterment of society, and nibble only on your tofu and be lean and perhaps immediately do your cardio after eating your tofu. And certainly don't enjoy anything with the meal. In fact, don't even let a sigh of relief come out of your body. That's the modern man. I'll be right back. Savage. Holiday Mike on the Savage Nation. I shift gears every few times a year into a holiday mode. So today, in addition to doing normal programming, we are reading from my book from 06 called The Political Zoo, where people on both sides of the aisle were given satirical animal personas and animal names, genus and species names. So George Soros was known as Leechus Omnipotentum. You know, you think that you've been hearing about George Soros now, but I knew about him then. Leechus Omnipotentum. And before I get to it, which I will in a moment, he was named the Budapest Centipede. And I wrote, the Budapest Centipede has his hands in more liberal pies than Jerry Nadler at a dessert buffet. That's a good one-liner. Steal it if you will, Rush, and don't credit me. Sacramento, Amy, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to let you know I think you're awesome and you make my day every time I listen to you.
Now, okay, so you're a younger listener. Do you like the Political Zoo stuff, or you want me to not read from it?
I like it. Keep going. I do want some direction from you, though. I know all the bad stuff that's going on in this world. I just sometimes feel like I can't do anything about it.
I know. It's very frustrating. And then you see the vermin in the gutters with the tents getting all the attention. They stand for nothing. They've given the society zero. And all they do is clog up the real working people from getting where they want to go to produce, to be productive members of society. So it's very frustrating seeing that the worst of America is being lionized by Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama as some kind of heroes. That must be very frustrating for a young, hardworking person like yourself.
It's hard. I agree. I don't know. I just don't really know what I can do to change it, to make it...
Here's what you do, Amy. It's a very short sentence. This is not the first time in history things have been bad. They've been a lot worse than they are now in the world. And in all times, in all ages, in all periods, through all generations, you have to go back to the adage that says, tend your own garden. What that means is don't worry about what they're doing. Don't worry about how they're behaving or the others. What you got to do is do what's best for yourself and your family, period, and let the world take care of itself. You're not going to change the world, Amy, no matter what the liars tell you. So pick a decent profession for yourself or a career or a job and do the best you can, be as honest as you can. And that's all you can do, Amy. That's all you can do. Now, if you want to go beyond that and join a Tea Party, that's also very good. The Tea Party changed the shape of the elections the last time we had elections, which is why the unions and the Democrat thugs unleashed the Occupy vermin on us in order to scare Tea Partiers away. But that's about all I can tell you. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. So I could continue a little of this, a little of that. We could do the news of the day. How does Newt surge in Iowa? Or I can read... I did already Newt Gingrich, right? How about Arnold Schwarzenegger? Remember him? Nah, he's not worth talking about. But I called his number, I mean, at that time. How about Howard Stern, probably the biggest phony in the history of the media? How could a bald man pretend he has hair like that and nobody exposes him? Sandusky says he only horsed around in the shower. That's like Howard Stern saying his hair is real. Howard Stern, Schlocko Jocko. This colorful, gangly creature is a mutant strain of the Long Island parrot, or lip species, bred accidentally on one of the island's many toxic waste sites. The lip has an uncanny ability to mimic the most vile comments that it hears and play them back with an added layer of verbal sewage. Preferring to jabber only early in the morning, the lip spends the rest of its day scavenging the New York City waste system for new tidbits to repeat for its next morning's appearance. Although this sewer spewer boasts that he cannot be tamed, his vision is impaired to the fact that he is the favorite pet of global media monkeys.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is nice, Mike, today on the Savage Nation because we are in the holiday mode. And I've been reading from a book, The Political Zoo, written by yours truly in 2006, where various and sundry individuals in politics and the media were castigated in a satirical manner because the object of satire, as John Dryden wrote in 1681, in order to avoid being hung in his time in England, he wrote, "The true end of satire is the amendment of vice by correction, and he who writes honestly is no more an enemy to the offender than the physician to the patient when he prescribes harsh remedies to an inveterate disease." And boy, do we have an inveterate political disease, don't we? You've got Newt Gingrich. We know the Democrats are all corrupt. 90% of them should be in prison, but since they control the jails, it will not be them in prison. They write the rules, and they steal from us. And then they tell us, how dare you even say that we're stealing? Why, it's not stealing, she said. It's for the children. It's for the children that we must make sure that we spend more next year on public works projects. It's for the children because we're constitutionalists. And we look at this, we can't believe what we're watching. But then again, we have a guy like Newt Gingrich, who was a lifetime grifter, a Hollywood, a Washington insider, well-known. Now he's surging in the polls. Why? Three words answer it. 9. And so now what are we left with? We're left with very little choice here, okay? So that's why I was reading from the Political Zoo. Al Sharpton was called the Megamouth Shark, also known as the Sharkton. Pompadoro Buffoonum. You know, the reason I did this is because he has always been a buffoon. You say, well, come on, he has a show on MSNBC. But the puppets on MSNBC, every last one of them is simply a puppet of General Electric, who paid no taxes on their income last year. Don't you understand that when you're conducting a tax scam the way GE appears to be doing, paying no taxes on $14 billion in income, all the while owning NBC and MSNBC and CNBC and whatever NBC they can get their hands on, everyone who works for Jeffrey Immelt has one job, and one job only, was continue the Ponzi scheme, continue screwing the public into thinking that they're working for a legitimately good American company. It's frightening to see this. They're all involved in this scam, covering up for GE, the parent company, the host company, and these little puppets think they're independent. Oh, I'm for the poor, I'm in socialism, I'm down with Bush, down with the Republicans, ha ha ha, down with the Tea Party. They're just puppets for Jeffrey Immelt, who gets away with paying no taxes. Doesn't this bother you? Ted Turner was called the Southern Widemouth Copperhead, as an unpredictable, aggressive reptile that is adept at moving into new areas and exerting territorial dominance. And I named the Malthus the Southus. You know, the Latin binomials for this book were really good, being trained in biology and botany. I thought it would be a very interesting way to approach politics and people in the media. But it wasn't a big hit. It sold fairly well, but it was way over the head of the average reader. They don't want to read this. They want to read Democrats bad, Republicans good. Why, we'll straighten out this mess. Just put us in power. So you see that. Was it Mencken who said no one ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American people? He was 100% right. No one ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American people, which is not my attempt to insult my own audience, because I think my audience is a lot smarter than they're given credit for, by the way. But here we are. But still, you'd rather me talk about meatballs and turkey and tryptophan. I understand that. But some of this is great. So rather than read from the book, some of these characters are long gone from the... Oh, look at her! Condi Rice, Stanford is fearsome. The Stanford saber-toothed tigress is a fierce and calculating predator that stalks the Potomac swamps looking for senatorial prey, feeding almost exclusively on left coast loons and the Marin County dodos. That's Condoleezza Rice. There have been reported sightings of the Stanford tigress all over the globe, and rumors that this friendly but ferocious feline has her cat eyes focused on becoming queen of the jungle. Do not let the cool demeanor of the saber-toothed tigress fool you, though for when you've got the power and the ear of the pack leader, you don't have to growl. Not bad. Condoleezza Rice is one of the classiest acts inside the Beltway. Brilliant, personable, loyal, savvy, articulate, and inexhaustibly talented. She very well may be one of the most qualified individuals to ever serve as Secretary of State. She can even ice skate and play classical piano. Where did she learn all this stuff? And then I go into it. So I think she was spared the real wrath that I saved for some people, such as Bill O'Reilly, Sean Penn. John McCain is the last one. I called him the turncoat mole. Now, remember, this was in 2006. I mean, you know, think about this. The Swifty and Savage saw McCain for who he was in 2006, and I called him the turncoat mole. Was I wrong? Stockholmus blemishi. The turncoat mole is a crafty creature that is quick to switch pack allegiances without any observable reason to do so. It regularly eats from the lower ends of the food chain, but constantly harasses any other animal choosing to do so. In 2000, the turncoat mole was all but exterminated from the national scene when it tried to root itself into the hostile habitat of South Carolina. It retreated to Arizona and is now making gestures to go national once again. Boy, was I ahead of the pack. The turncoat mole sometimes hunts in tandem with the Senate snakes, with at least a few moles being eaten for dinner in exchange for looking bipartisan. Perhaps its chief natural weakness is that it is blind to how its burrowing undermines the principles of the party pack. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but you know who McCain was, right? But as bad as the turncoat mole was, there's nobody to compare with what we're seeing today. I've been studying politics my whole life, really, since I'm about 18 years old. I've been very political, even though I was studying biology. I remember arguing politics in the little cafeteria at Queens College as a kid. You know, I was always interested in politics. It was intuitive in me. I have never in my life seen such overt thievery as I'm seeing in the Democrats today. Never. They invented a scam called green energy. Then they created fake companies, front companies, that would make the hardcore five families of New York proud. And with the green companies, they've been able to pillage the economy unlike any time in American history. There's no need to use brass knuckles or truncheons anymore. All they've got to do is say it's green and then unleash the drug addicts in the streets of New York and San Francisco and where else. Intense if you say a word about it. Sacramento, Cook, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, my God, I love you so much. I've been trying to...
Please, this is not a Sandusky show here.
The Political Zoo is the most important book you've ever written.
Really? I remember. It didn't sell a lot. I think it sold about, 100,000. I don't remember. I mean, it wasn't a bomb. It did fairly well, but it wasn't like a Trickle Up Poverty, which sold 250 in hardcover.
Everything in it is so incredible. I read it just to get cheered up sometimes when I get the...
Oh, you bought it years ago. I see what you mean.
Oh, I did. I bought it when it came out, and it cheers me up all the time. Whenever I get depressed listening to your show because there's so much truth that's horrendous, I pull out the Political Zoo. And all of those people you're talking about now, you should write another book called The Political Zoo 2 and teach us about all of their shenanigans.
My God. You know, yeah, a lot of these people are no longer in the scene. You know, Kofi Annan, no one knows anymore. Alec Baldwin, no one even knows who he is. Harry Belafonte, no one ever heard of him anymore. He's gone. Some of them are still around, though, still, you know, plaguing us with their corruption.
Thank you
for the call. I should have given him a gift of abuse of power because he's such a loyal listener. Harry Belafonte was called a largemouth faux Jamaican loon. Gone bananas. GONEBANANAS. Harry Belafonte is the largemouth faux Jamaican loon, is a small-brained creature whose native habitat is New York City, where it was hatched, but which has established a bogus identity as being from Jamaica, a region in which it spent a few years of its early birdhood. With a diet consisting primarily of nuts and fruitcake, its enormous oral orifice allows it to swallow large quantities of Venezuelan and Cuban gruel and regurgitate it at will. The largemouth loon is one of the few birds that contracts a bizarre form of dementia and can do so at an early age. Who could blame old age? You could blame old age for much of the madness of Harry Belafonte, but the sad truth is that he's demonstrated serious mental decline for decades. This was in 06. Yet instead of putting him on a road tour with the Penguins and Barbettes and other one-hit wonders of the 50s, the left seems insistent on trotting out crazy Uncle Harry to be some sort of philosophical spokesmodel. Thank God for fellow travelers, or Belafonte would be the flat-out looniest loon in the neo-Bolshevik jungle. And at least she's got an excuse, although I can hear Katie Couric claiming the largemouth loon to be above criticism, too. After all, Katie Couric might say, America has denied this proud bird a hit record for the last 50 years just because it is a loon. This is worse than bigotry. This is lunacy. I don't exaggerate about the 50 years. His one big hit album, Calypso, debuted in 1956. Not long after that, he was thrilled to get a gig on The Muppet Show. There's not much that escapes the loon's steel trap maw, but while touring Kenya in 04 at UNICEF's Goodwill Ambassador, Belafonte expressed his shock at the level of poverty in Africa. Really? Shocked at the poverty in Africa? Who would have ever guessed? That discovery led him into a rant about how some Kenyans lived very well while most others lived in squalor, just like in Los Angeles, and it was all Bush's fault anyhow. Since no one wanted him to sing the Banana Boat song, see, there's some good lines. I can't read the whole thing. You know who Harry Belafonte is, don't you? Always coming out with some left-wing insanity. So let me end it with the last paragraph, then I'll take a quick break. Daylight come, and me wants this loon to go home. If that home is Jamaica, Venezuela, or Cuba, all the better, just as long as it's not New York where he was born. The largemouth loon has been faking his third-world identity for the bulk of his nicely feathered existence. Let's see how he adapts to those lovely third-world rainforests without the protection of his U.S. passport. Symbol shot, I'll be right back.
Work all night and a drink of rum.
Daylight come.
We'll be right back.
printing money faster than Bernanke can grow a mustache. I've never seen anything like it. He should be arrested. You know, if you have an accountant in your company that cooks the books and you get caught, he gets caught, he goes to jail. Bernanke's cooking the books for Obama. How in the world does he get away with this, this guy? And he acts like a saint. It's unbelievable to me. In other words, if you cook the books in a company and you're a public company, you go to jail. He's cooking the books. He's printing money. And he's telling us, spend more money, and I'll print as much as you need. That's called a Ponzi scheme. It's a RICO game. But they write the rules, and they own the jail, so I better watch out here. Julie in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Uncle Michael, I have been married to an Eastern European immigrant now for about 6.5 years. I have never once seen him read an entire book, never once. He got his hands on a copy of Abuse of Power, and he couldn't put it down. He read it in 2 days. The following day, he woke up having nightmares, and he's been very uneasy since.
Well, the book, unfortunately, touches on a lot of reality of yours, truly. And who bought him the book? You did or he did?
No, my brother did. And, you know, we consider you one of our family, so we're reading
it. Isn't that beautiful? Well, no, Abuse of Power strikes very close to the heart of many men because they understand what could happen to you if you're a little too honest and dare to speak out. Especially, it's much worse now than it was then. The things have changed so rapidly under this Marxist presidency that most of us dare say nothing. That's what's happening to the political commentators out there. You can understand Obama has tightened the grip on virtually all opposition. We're approaching something horrible in this country, and we all know it. We all sense it. First, it was the Black Caucus calling the Tea Party's racist. They were the first volley. The second volley were the thugs in the unions saying, take them out. Remember that? The third volley were the drug addicts and students organized by the unions unleashing themselves on the streets of New York. We do not know what the fourth attack is going to be. My suspicion is it will come very shortly after the holidays. On to the election. God only knows what this man is liable to pull. So Abuse of Power, my friends, is Barack Hussein Obama. Julie, I'm going to send you another copy of Abuse of Power to give to another relative. In the time that remains, I'm getting a lot of requests to read my entry on Jesse Jackson for some reason in the political zoo. Obama's not in here because no one ever heard of him. I don't think he was in America yet in 2006. But Jesse Jackson, extortus exploitus, the Reverend Vulture, is a well-heeled, well-dressed scavenger in sheep's clothing that feeds off the death and decay in the political jungle. Observing the cycle of life from a pious perch, the Reverend Vulture does all its preying with an E. It swoops down and begins feasting on any creature showing signs of distress, be they live or dead, including animals from its own flock. Its lightness of conscience and lack of gravity give the Reverend Vulture the speed and dexterity to beat all of the scavengers to just about any cultural rot that has attracted a camera crew. And just as kings and queens of yore use trained falcons, so do today's petty potentates and two-bit tyrants use the Reverend Vulture. Only an Jesse Jackson passed for a vulture. A race timid media have declared this big-butted bird a protected species, and it has gone to its head. He flaps around like the Archangel Michael, but the Michael he most resembles is also the Jackson he most resembles. The one noteworthy difference between them is the glove. As one of the least moral individuals in public life today, the Reverend Vulture is ironically one of the least vulnerable. He lives deep in a racial swamp of his own creation. When he's not defending convicted murderers, drug lords, street thugs are third world dictators. This vulture is managing a dozen different hustles and shakedowns to engorge himself, his family, and his friends. And by victimizing the very people he claims to be helping for nothing more than his own vainglory, this scavenger fuels the very racist myths that keep the swamp swampy and the black community indentured to the Democrat overlords who would hate to see it drain. Once upon a time, before he found a better racket, the Reverend Vulture ran Operation Breadbasket. Then he ran a couple of times for president, and I go on. And there's much more in here. Who can forget those interns? Apparently Jackson chose to show his interns how Operation Push got its name, and the research quickly turned from sociology to biology. Jackson's generous $10,000 a month research grant to the young scholar, not to mention et cetera and so on. It's all in the political show.
Of a white Christmas, just like the ones I
It's holiday time. It's nice, Mike. Don't get offended at the satire. I mean, it's part of the American, you know. It actually should be part of the American landscape, but it really isn't anymore. Truthfully, satire has been long lost as a form of political punditry. It's gone. There's almost none of it anymore. True satire. I don't mean the phony satire that you see coming out of the mouths of the drug addicts on HBO. Because true satire is very difficult to create. And I think I really achieved it with this book. Unfortunately, it's no longer in print. And this wouldn't be a complete day if I didn't end on the note of Al Sharpton, the Megamouth Shark, also known as the Sharkton. Pompadoro buffoonum is one of the most feared creatures on the East Coast, although relatively harmless to humans, despite the media's excessive sensationalized coverage of Sharkton attacks. Although the Megamouth Shark spends most of its time roaming through its natural habitat, the polluted bays of New York City, its species will migrate to anywhere there are rough waters and vulnerable swimmers. Fortunately, it is easily spotted by its dorsal fin that looks very much like slicked back hair. The Sharkton can smell the odor of cultural tension or race being baited from miles away. But though it often threatens to attack other species, it usually preys on its own kind. Natural enemy is the great white anything. I won't read anything more about it because it's pretty much true, and what's the point of it? And he's now a puppet of General Electric. They figured they'd throw him into the mix as well to scare everybody into saying anything about GE not paying any taxes. Now, would it be complete if I didn't mention Bill Maher, loudmouthus, liberalitis? The Southern California screeching weasel is a timid but noisy creature, keen on annoying many of the other animals in the zoo, although often posing as a predator. This weak, mostly herbivorous rodent has teeny teeth, no claws, shrunken reproductive organs, and wholly relies on the support of more productive animals for its meager existence. Its natural habitat is primarily the dark and smoky corners of little mines, but it has been known to venture into the light of respectable discourse until frightened back into its hole by bigger, more intelligent species. Its mating habits consist of noncommittal relationships with exhibitionist females. Because of its failure to either willfully or successfully reproduce, this pathetic little creature faces extinction. And that's Bill Maher. And you know who he is. The Politburo put him on in the L.A. branch, as you well know, setting him up as a modern-day Caesar. And with a fake audience. If you're a conservative Christian, according to the screeching weasel, you have a neurological disorder and believe in fairy tales. The only true sins that are recognized in his world are patriotism and faith. The most entertaining element of his show is the ongoing battle of wit with sharp-toothed conservative women. What protects Maher's ego is his failure to understand how painfully one-sided these battles are. Even former swimsuit model Kathy Ireland flustered the screeching weasel by challenging his advocacy of abortion. Cut down by an aging supermodel. Hang it up, Bill. The screeching weasel responds to his on-air emasculation by attacking conservative women who aren't there. And he did that over and over again, like Laura Bush. The perennial bachelor hooks up with porn stars for girlfriends, but refuses to settle down or rear the next generation of little weasels. Perhaps his aversion to reproduce is well and good given his understanding of children. I have two dogs which are pretty much the same thing. What? They're sweet, they're loving, they're kind. Lacking children of their own, these weasels have to steal ours through the education and entertainment rackets. If they couldn't do that, they'd be trying to get the electoral franchise for canine Americans. For these creatures, dogs are just like children, aren't they? Why can't they vote? They'll soon demand. Whether it's Christians, first ladies, social conservatives, the mentally handicapped, or his scant audience, this balding weasel gets off by identifying the meekest and weakest of the herd and attacking, knowing full well he'd be devoured by any of the more aggressive species. Savage has repeatedly rejected the producer's overtures to appear as a setup for the weasel and his gang. Now, I realize as a zookeeper, I can get hostile at times, but only because I deal with creepy predators like these all day. And because it's my job to protect tourists who just want to stroll, through the political zoo without getting feces lobbed on their clothes. So next time you see the screeching weasel targeting and striking some poor hapless soul, let me know. I'll lock him into a cage that promises a more balanced contest. I'll pair him up with a female who could match him witticism for witticism, someone of equal intellectual heft. Does anyone have Anna Nicole Smith's phone number? That was in 2006. let's see. What do you want me to do now? Sacramento, Virginia, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hello, Mr. Savage. I finally get to speak to you.
Make it loud, though. Talk up.
Okay. Is it this loud enough?
Yeah, what's on your mind?
I just wanted to tell you I listen to you all the time. I just love the way your knowledge is. You're just very, you're so well read. But my main concern is, Mr. Savage, you need to calm down a little. I don't want you to have a heart attack on the show or your blood pressure goes skyrocketing.
You know, think of how it would be for the ratings, though, if I died on the air.
Pardon me?
Have there been does anyone know of any talk shows who died on the air? I mean, that would be something. What an act that would be. But the problem is you can't come back from it.
No,
I'm sure there's plenty of people in the media who would like to do that and then come back the next day. The problem is you can't. Thanks for the compliments. I haven't been feeling good lately, but I'm feeling better than I was in the past. Let me put it to you that way. As a pundit once wrote many years ago, I've been down so long it's starting to look like up to me. Miami, Florida. Patrick, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage, how are you doing?
What's up?
I had a question. Your analysis is spot on. What's your acid test for politicians and political figures? How do you determine
Okay, that? Very, very nice question. Unfortunately, no one can hear you because you're on a cell phone. You're asking me what is a candidate's litmus test, right? What would I ask any candidate who I really wanted to vote for, right?
Yeah.
Okay, very simple. Where do you stand on borders, language, and culture? How's that for a starter? Have you heard any of these candidates discuss borders? Yes, they've talked about illegal immigration, but only a smidgen amount because they're afraid of the Latino vote. Have they talked about English only instead of the polarization of America with bilingualism, trilingualism, and tribalism? Has anyone referred to the cultural foundations of America? Nobody. So therefore, none of them are qualified. New York City, W.O.R. Lee, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I want to tell you something. 50 years ago, my grandfather said to me, I want you to do one thing for me. I want you to mind your own business and work every day at what you have to do until you can do what you want to do.
Right.
And I taught that to my children. He lived through the Depression. He always had a job. They always had food. They didn't have everything, but they had what they needed. And they loved
And they had each other, didn't they, Lee? They had each
they
other.
Had each other. Yes, the family was tight. And it's no, there are no tight families. There's no the family is disappearing. You can't get six people in a room without an argument. Thanksgiving Day, we used to have 40 people in a small house with all the tables thrown together. Everybody
had
food. We all ate.
Right. Well, I'm telling you, I'm looking forward to a real family Thanksgiving this year. We're all going to be together. This is going to be beautiful. It's one of my best ones of all time. So, I mean, we do have a tight family. We do. I mean, I do. I'm very fortunate. I mean, I'm very, very fortunate about that. I mean, I don't want to be on Sunset, you know, Strip with a joint in my hand thinking I'm cool because I'm dining in a hotel bar up there eating a piece of cold turkey, you know, with some hooker. You know, that they think they're cool with that? Yeah, get back to me at the end of your life and let me know how you feel. Hey, Lee, let me tell you something. Without children, there's no life at all. The truth, you know, I never talked about it, Lee. I never really went into it. With the value and importance of having a family and children. Nobody talks about it anymore because pornography has polluted the public mind where everyone thinks that it's all about the orgasm, not about the object of lovemaking. And the object of lovemaking certainly might be pleasure, but it's also family. That's the core of this impulse. And it's been forgotten here in America because of the degenerates in the media who have promulgated the idea that it's all about a quick and easy, you know, bit of pleasure.
Exactly. You're so right.
I think you called to say your grandfather gave you the same advice years ago, which is the advice I gave that young girl when she said, "What can I do?" And I said, "Tend your own garden," right?
Exactly. It's what he told me. He told me, he said, "Listen, I asked him a question. I said, how did you live through the Depression without getting depressed?"
Good line.
He said, "I didn't get depressed because I didn't read a newspaper and I didn't listen to the radio. I went to work every day and I came home at night and ate dinner with my kids."
And yeah, but if I told my audience that, I'd be out of business. Lee, I'm sending you a gift for the holidays, Abuse of Power. And I recommend everybody listening, if you really want to buy this book, buy it this week, because I'm not telling you what's not true. It's 6 printings now. The first printing is almost gone. I don't think the second printing is going to be ready for the holidays. You want a rare first printing, first edition, buy it this week. Abuse of Power is a great book. On top of it, don't just buy it for me. Buy it for you. It's a great story. Sacramento, Denise, welcome to the program. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Mr. Savage. I just wanted to let you know I've never listened to talk radio before, and I've completely loved your talking. I have learned more from you than I have anybody else in politics, and I just really appreciate listening.
You mean this is the first day you've ever heard talk radio?
No, I've just actually tuned you in for this last month. I've only been 30 days.
Oh, on KSTE out of the capital of California where the grifters congregate.
Yes, yes, and I have enjoyed.
Where was Governor Brown during the spreading of lice and scabies in San Francisco? How come he had nothing to say about it? Where's Governor Brown? What? Because he was put in by the unions, he didn't have anything to say? What a disgrace we have here in this state. There's not a single politician who cares about the people in this state. It's a nightmare.
I totally agree.
You want to take something home for the holidays? Take that and put it in the that's a real stocking stuffer. Ask yourself where Governor Moonbeam was during the encampments in San Francisco. Nowhere to be found. Why? Because he was planted by the unions. It's a horror, a nightmare. I never thought I'd see this day, and I was fooled by him. I gave him money a few years ago before he ran for the governorship, because I thought he was a guy who had grown up and reformed and become a centrist. Little did I know that most of these left-wing birds never, ever change their stripes. Never. In fact, they get worse as they get older. They just fool people like me. I'm a gullible guy in many ways. I'm a very gullible guy. I want to believe in people. Florida, John, you're on the Savage Nation.
Doctor, I was wondering if the political zoo had a Michael Savage. I would love to hear the description.
Yes. In fact, the cover of the book has a cartoon. All of these are cartoons. And the cover of the book shows a cage on wheels, and it shows the various and sundry characters who are satirized in it. And outside of it, there is a zookeeper with a cap that says zoo holding a microphone, and that's me, caricatured. So in the political zoo, in my world, in my political zoo world, I'm the zookeeper. Now, if people don't like that, they can write their own book. That's all. Yeah, it's a very serious time that we live in. Never in my lifetime have I seen... I've seen graft. I've seen corruption. Yes, I have. But I've never seen naked graft and corruption, not even being disguised as it is today. I have never seen anything like it. It is open. It is clear. It is criminal. And yet they make the laws and they've made it legal to rob the public blind, to pillage us, in other words, to pillage the treasury with impunity. I have never seen anything like it. You go back a few years, you go a piker's amount of money compared to what these people are getting away with today. You look at what they put Michael Milken in jail for 15 or so, 20 years ago, I don't even remember. He would be considered an Eagle Scout today for what they're doing today on Wall Street. Why have the times gotten so corrupt, and how? The real question is, how did they do it? How did they escape the wrath of the people? It's really quite clear. They buy media companies. First, they break down the barrier between the multiplicity of ownership. It used to be prohibited for a single entity to own so many enterprises in the media at once. It would never have flown 20, 30 years ago for General Electric to own NBC. Why? I told you, I grew up in a liberal age. The liberals rightly warned about the interlocking corporate directorships. This was in the 60s. And although I was a neophyte in politics, I came to understand what that meant. Interlocking corporate directorship. So if a man sits on the board of General Electric, and then he sits on the board of NBC, and then he sits on the board of a drug company, and then he sits on the board of an insurance company, what you get is MSNBC, NBC, General Electric, and no taxes being paid. That's number one. That's only the beginning of it. You watch these cable channels on NBC, on MSNBC, or CNN, do you know what I see? Most of the ads are for mesothelioma by shyster lawyers. And then the other ads are for other shyster lawyers, class action shyster lawyers, class action vermin who should be deported and their children, their assets seized. The other ads are for the drugs. Half the ads are for medications, and the other ads are for lawyers suing the drug companies that make the medications for causing congenital diseases that the drugs had nothing to do with. How do they get away with it? Because the country is broken from top to bottom. There once was a presidential candidate named John Edwards. Remember him? I was the first and only one in the media who called him an outright villain from day one. I said to you, this man had made his fortune by breaking hospitals and doctors across the Southeast. He destroyed them. He was like the Black Plague. Remember John Edwards? And then he had the audacity, because he got away with all of that. He declared congenital diseases in children to have been caused by hospitals and malpractice by physicians. It was a complete lie. But he was able to stock the jury with the toothless from the Ozarks. The toothless, brain dead, who had no IQ, were handpicked and put on juries, and this man was able to hoodwink them. He figured he can get away with that, he can go national. So now, we know what happened since. Someone got him, who knows who. Who knows whose toes he stepped on if they went after him. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So in the political zoo, you know, I should be reading from Abuse of Power, but I've done that. You bought it. You will buy it. It'll be sold out. So I went back to an earlier book because we're living through such a charade. When I saw Newt Gingrich, it came out with the money from Freddie, and he has the nerve to try to lie to us, to tell us that he was a historian. The guy is a well-known lobbyist. The guy is a well-known insider. And to see him surging in the polls tells me that it's hopeless. So I'm reading from the Political Zoo to show you I've been into this for a while, 2006, a book I wrote. And I'm going to conclude this hour with the one I wrote on Harry Reid, Mousei Pugilisticus. The Nevada desert kangaroo rat earned its name from its repeated jumping from position to position and its rodent-like zeal for subversion and destruction. The kangaroo rat is one of the most lethal animals in the political zoo, not for anything it actually does, but for the progressive plague it spreads that is known to paralyze and destroy the body politic. Scientists haven't yet confirmed if the disease is caused by the special interest fleas carried by the rat, or if it's found in the odorous policy droppings that it leaves behind. Harry Reid, the Senate, well, at that time minority leader, fights congressional corruption, battles special interests, and supports the war against America's enemies, depending on what day it is, or even the hour, for at other times he promotes and conceals congressional corruption, rolls over in the face of liberal special interests, and supports the war against the nation's war to bring terrorists to justice. For years, Reid was known as one of the nice guys. On a clear day, the kangaroo rat realizes why Tom Daschle is now a member of the private sector. The good people of South Dakota finally realize that Daschle's body had been snatched by aliens from outer space, only to be replaced by a liberal demagogue and obstructionist. The kangaroo rat's Democratic colleagues have a pod growing in his basement even now, just in case this bouncy rodent refuses to serve as the partisan liberal hack that Democrats need him to be. And so forth and so on. There's so much here I can't read. You know, you got to read the book yourself. You can't even find it. It's a used book somewhere. And let's see how I end this one. Well, I don't know. There's not much more I can read here from it. Shall I conclude with Pat Robertson, Propheticus Evangelicus, the great prophet whale, or shall we leave him out of it? John Kerry. Chuck Schumer, Gotham Pushes. Chuck Schumer, Gotham Pushes. The Brooklyn jackass is an obstinate and excessively loud beast of burden that was removed from the petting zoo by veterinarians for turning overly red when petted. One should approach this braying creature cautiously. If it is near a camera, be particularly careful. Never place yourself between the ass and the lens. A particularly volatile animal, the Brooklyn jackass has to shift its position when exposed to light or heat. It is closely related to the dumbass and often carries out the simplest tasks ass backwards. Not bad.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
So let's see what's in the news today. I mean, obviously, it's the day after the big love-in in Zucchini Park, and they've all gone home now for Thanksgiving, I guess. It's soon Thanksgiving break for everyone except the homeless bums and the molesters. So on the top of MichaelSavage.com, I've kind of summarized my view of these the rabble. Unions, communists, anarchists, and rabble equal occupy. Unions, communists, anarchists, and rabble equal occupy. Who have I missed? Democrats, sorry. Democrats, unions, communists, anarchists, and rabble equal occupy. Thank you. Sorry, I missed that. Media won't link White House shooter to Occupy Wall Street. No. Imagine how the media would be wailing if the guy was a Tea Partier. Democrats honor Rangel 1 year after ethics censure. That's Nancy Pelosi at work. On Wall Street, unoccupied with nowhere to go. Bill Ayers was involved in the Occupy Chicago movement. A $58 million actress joined a Wall Street protest. Anne Hathaway, whoever she is, acted as an average Joe. I think it was blackboards, not banks, she was walking around with a pea cap. How charming. One of them got what he was asking for, a nice bloody skull. And a hippie mom who ditched a family was arrested, fighting with the cops all the way. While a Wall Street commuter said, we're all 99%, stop blocking our way to work. Big Fannie Gingrich defends work for Freddie. Need I say more? The puppets on MSNBC are nothing but puppets for General Electric, who paid no taxes on $14 billion profits. Listen to what I just said to you. No matter how they protest on MSNBC that they're for you, just remember who they work for. They work for General Electric, which owns them. And GE paid no taxes on $14 billion in profits. So that explains all of the deviants on MSNBC acting like they're against this, against that, but they're there only to cover up for the tax evasion of GE, in my opinion. Obama gave RFK Jr.'s company $1.4 billion. Whoa. A lot of money. Could buy an awful lot of booze with that. let's see. What else is in the news on MichaelSavage.com? Muslim father murdered his three daughters. He felt ashamed that his eldest daughter had married a Pakistani. I don't even want to look at their insanity. Psychiatric drug use spreads. Well, that explains Zucchini Park. Airline passengers asked for extra cash for fuel. It was a flight from India to England, and they landed somewhere, and they were sent off the plane to cash machines to pay for gas. Molester helped cast child actors. He's a registered sex offender who was convicted years ago for taking a 9-year-old boy away with him to New York for a long period of time. He's casting child actors in Hollywood. Ha, 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 ha. And finally, if this isn't enough for you from the world of the crazies, Warren Beatty's transgender son calls Chaz Bono a misogynist. I don't know if you could figure this out, but it just shows you what they produce in Hollywood. Warren Beatty is married to someone named Ann Bennings. They had four lovely children. Well, three lovely children and a lunatic. Stephen was then Kathleen. Okay, Kathleen became Stephen, and Stephen says... he's a transgendered son, used to be a woman. He's criticized Chaz Bono, saying Chaz is misogynistic. Whatever that means. Can anyone follow this? The only answer I say to this is 999.
This is a basic question without regard to individual intellect. This is a question about, do you want to invest in America for prosperity or austerity and cut taxes for the most privileged few? This is a clear choice. And I tell all Americans, get off the couch and get in motion, because our future is really on the line. I mean, at the end of the day, the people who back Cain, Romney, Perry and all the rest, don't choose these people because they respect women or because they have good memories or because they're consistent in their positions. They back them because they're willing to cut the network of government services even more and cut taxes for the richest even more. This is why they get support, the support that they do get, because they're willing to dismantle the American middle class.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199. 800-255-4199 or go to AmericaIsRising.com. 800-255-4199. AmericaIsRising.com. Let's see what else is in the news. Newt is propelled in the polls, beating Mitt. That's not hard to do. I could have beat Mitt. Joe Paterno admitted to hospital for lung cancer. That's terrible. He's probably innocent of all charges. Protests rage in Cairo in the Arab winter. Iran drills for nuke strike. Antibiotic-resistant infections spreading through Europe. Pelosi publicly backs the disgraced Rangel. Well, they belong in the same league. What do you mean, backs? They're one and the same. I guess the Wall Street protest is over, right? They've all gone home now.
It's too cold for them.
Well, it's Thanksgiving break. They got to go home for the tofu turkey.
Tofu turkey on the table.
Well, they can talk about they're getting arrested, too, to their commie parents and all their relatives.
They can share their experiences.
They can waterboard the tofu turkey. Florida Dem senator in trouble, not interesting. They're bringing up Natalie Wood's death. No one knows who she is, so that's the cover-up Obama scandals, isn't it? They ran through the molestation scandal at Penn State. That's burnt itself out already. So now they're dredging up an actress who was found dead 40 years ago, Beowulf, or 30, 40 years ago?
30 years ago. I remember seeing that news story when I was a kid.
Nobody knows who she is. Nobody remembers her.
Yeah, she was big in the
1950s. And yet it was all over the news today. It's not about the Solyndra $500 million disappearing. It's not about Michelle and Barry hiding in Bali while the country almost was wrecked. Who's going to be dug up next? Lincoln.
New twist found in Lincoln case.
I think Leprechaun resuscitated Lincoln and has
You're
a bestseller
right.
with it.
You're right. He wrote a book on that.
Well, hey, what could be better? If he has Newt Gingrich on as one of his friends, what more do we need? Speaking of which, today on the Savage Nation, we have a really, really big treat for you. If you've just tuned in, we've been reading about Newt Gingrich, Spinellus Cavinian from the Political Zoo. The Spinellus Cavinian, the Georgia Gopak tick, is a hard-shelled but soft-headed pest that sustains itself by sucking the blood out of any organism that will increase the tick's much-desired power drive. And more about Newt Gingrich from my book, The Political Zoo, published way back in 06, a little-known book where I wrote about him and many other politicians and political hacks on television. Rudy Giuliani was roundly attacked. How come he hasn't run yet? New York is pseudo-conservatus. Why hasn't Giuliani thrown his horns in the ring?
I heard him pop up recently and say that if he were mayor of New York, the protesters would have been gone on the first day.
Well, that's probably true, but he isn't mayor of New York. He's a lobbyist.
And a has-been.
Well, the big news today is that many Democrat leaders have publicly praised the Occupy Wall Street movement, and we've been asking, how badly do you think this will affect the Democrats in 2012? Newt Gingrich admitting to taking money from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, do you believe this will destroy his campaign? Yes. Why can't Gingrich win? Yes. Michelle Bachmann was also found to have taken political contributions from Fannie and Freddie. Do you trust any of the current Republican candidates? Oh, God. Which quality is currently missing among the current Republican field? Let's start with honesty and intelligence. Now, this is horrible when you have an Obama in the White House who they're making look better every day. Anyway, all this and more right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Fort Lauderdale, Matt, welcome to the program.
Hey, Dr. Savage. I was wondering if I could ask you a life coach question.
You know, that's what I want to do today, life coach. I'm so bored of the news. All right, I'll be Dr. Savage, life coach. Question, please.
Should I get a PhD in molecular biology, or should I go get a medical doctorate degree in medical school?
Are you a white male?
Yes.
Okay. Well, a white male need not apply for any positions in the universities today, particularly if you're brilliant. You'll be working behind some of the stupidest people on earth who will pick on you until you eventually leave your chosen profession. So that answers the question of a PhD. Now, with regard to your medical degree, it sounds if you're a bright enough guy, in the old days you would have wanted to be a doctor. But today the field of being a doctor is not that coveted anymore, is it?
Well, I mean, looking at the future of healthcare, kind of got an interest in science, but I'm not so sure.
Well, you'll always make a living as a medical doctor. The problem is with managed care, you're going to be answering to some dummy in the government, probably with less than an AA degree. Some AA dummy who was pushed ahead in the health department will actually be telling you, a doctor, what you can do and what you can't do. I mean, you want to answer to a moron who works for Obama or the next idiot in the White House?
Not
my
really.
Suggestion is that you become a talk show host. All right, no. If you're good in science, and the molecular biology is a fabulous field. It's fascinating. But if you're a white male, you're going to be picked on and you're going to be pushed aside for some dummy who can sit over you and tell you what to do wrong. So I don't know what to recommend. I mean, the fields of science and medicine are not what they used to be. If, of course, you had broken into America illegally or came here as a foreign exchange student, I would say go in either of those fields because the world is your oyster. But since you're a native-born American white male, I would say the future is quite dim for you in either field.
Yeah.
I'm a cynic. Look, Matt, I'm quite cynical about the university system today. They're cauldrons of communism and hatred. And I see what happened. Did you see what happened to the Spanish professor last week? I don't know where it was. Was it at Yale or was it Princeton? He had taught there for 6 or 8 years, right? And he came up for tenure, and a couple of commie stooges in the department lower than him ran a hate campaign against him. They denied him tenure, and he had to go back to Spain because his green card would have expired. He committed suicide because he couldn't take the shame. Do you know how they got rid of him? To a girl, he raised his voice to one of the girl students at some point. She said it was considered sexually hostile. And to one of the boys who was not listening to him, one of the students, the grad students, he said, "Why don't you stop rubbing your crotch and start doing some work?" He took that as a sexist statement, and they drummed him out of the professorship. Can you believe what's going on in these stooges in these schools today?
I can. I mean, as an undergrad, I saw it all the time. I mean, professors are so biased, and the politics in academia is disgusting, to say the least. But
right, but you, so okay. So you're a conservative young. What year are you in undergrad?
Well, I graduated in 09. So
you graduated what, from college?
Yes.
And you want to go back to school now?
Yes.
Whatever you do, don't get an MBA because you'll be chasing your tail. There are so many people with MBAs that couldn't run a souvlaki stand in Manhattan. I don't think they could qualify to buy a taxi license. They wouldn't even know how to go about the payoffs to buy a taxi license today. So I really don't know what to advise anybody anymore. I would say, do you have any inclination towards business at all?
That's kind of the problem. I'm much more of the pure aspect of science.
You're a theoretical guy, and you really do belong in science. And if we still lived in America, I wouldn't even be having this conversation with you. You wouldn't even be asking me. If we still lived in America that was fair, you would just simply apply to graduate school and be a molecular biologist and have a career as a professor, I would guess, right?
Probably.
All right, but you're asking this question because you know in advance of asking it what kind of impediments that would be put in the way of you as a white male. Is that correct or incorrect?
Yeah, that's part of the problem, and all the politics besides being a conservative.
Yes, so I don't know the answer. You know, if you had a business orientation, I would say try to develop a product and take it to market. I mean, that's a long shot, but it can be done. But you don't. You're a theoretical guy, so you're going to have to go into academia, and you may have to put up with dummies telling you what to do. That may be the price you have to pay for pursuing your chosen profession. You may have to listen to absolute morons who are your department chairman, you know, who came from some third world nation and was pushed right to the top of the heap because they pushed everyone around with threats.
There's really no room for freedom of thought.
No. There's no room for excellence in the university, if that's what you're thinking. Excellence be damned. No, excellence be damned. Well, what do you think? We're living in China, a free country? All right. I wish I had an answer. You see, sometimes even a life coach doesn't have an answer. Only a fool would hazard a guess to tell you what to do. Sometimes it's a mixture of intelligence, an intelligent decision, and fate. What are you doing right now, by the way? I don't mean this minute, but what are you doing with your life at this time?
Well, right now I'm seriously considering this.
I'm saying, are you working right now?
Yeah. Loans from undergrad.
I'm sorry, what are you doing?
I'm just working at a local place trying to pay back loans from undergrad. So.
Okay. What city do you live in? Florida?
In Florida.
No, I was going to offer you a job, but okay, you live too far away. All I can say is good luck. I don't have an answer. That's all. I don't know you well enough, and I don't know your other inclinations.
Savage.
Your firm was paid $300,000 by Freddie Mac in 2006. What did you do for that money?
Were you asking me?
Yes.
Sure, I offered them advice on precisely what they didn't do. My advice as a historian, when they walked in and said to me, we are now making loans to people who have no credit history and have no record of paying back anything, but that's what the government wants us to do, as I said to them at the time, this is a bubble. This is insane. This is impossible.
Were you not trying to help Freddie Mac fend off the effort by the Bush administration? I
have never done any lobbying. Every contract that was written during the period when I was out of the office specifically said I would do no lobbying, and I offered advice.
With the GOPAC tick, Newt Gingrich leading most polls, I don't even want to imagine what a Newt Gingrich presidency would look like. Would it be anything like the last Republican president? See? Well, let's fantasize with Gene Healy, the vice president of the Cato Institute. Gene, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks for having me on.
What damage would a GOPAC tick Newt Gingrich presidency do to this country?
Well, that's hard to say, but one thing you can say is that that Newt Gingrich is not a conservative alternative to Mitt Romney. They're down the line on a lot of issues. You both support the individual mandate, both have resisted entitlements reforms, and Gingrich has probably tacked even further to the left over the years. Mitt Romney has not ever made a commercial where he sat on the love seat with Nancy Pelosi, and Romney has not really played footsie with John Kerry over global warming. The idea that Newt Gingrich is some kind of conservative alternative to Mitt Romney is just something that can't withstand any examination at all.
What do you think led to a sudden rise in the GOP field?
I think it was style over substance. He is a captivating speaker. He's a good debater. But at the end of the day, he's Mitt Romney with more baggage and bolder hand gestures. Nobody is particularly happy in the Republican primary electorate with Mitt Romney. Giving credit where it's due, Newt Gingrich is an impressive debater. He's a very forceful speaker, and he does a very good impression of somebody who has the courage of his convictions. Unfortunately, if you look at the record, you see that the idea that Newt Gingrich would be portraying himself as a Washington outsider is ridiculous. He has proven very adept at playing the Washington game. He's collected large amounts of money from the ethanol lobby and from Freddie Mac, which helped pump up the housing crisis. This is not somebody who offers a small government alternative to Mitt Romney.
In your mind, who is a true small government conservative in this field, if there is one?
Well, I don't, I'm not here to endorse anyone for sure, but there certainly are candidates, even in this race, who have a much more impressive record of limited government constitutionalism. You'd look at Ron Paul, and you'd look at former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson on a whole host of issues. They are small government advocates.
Well, what do we need to do to turn this country around?
I think that the tendency people have to look for a man on horseback to emerge out of one of the major political parties is really a false hope. I think that what we need in this country more than anything, to a certain extent, we get the leadership we deserve. And I think what we need in this country more than anything else is the restoration of a constitutional culture, a restoration of respect for the rule of law and the limits on government power that our founding fathers laid down for us. And I hope we're starting in some small way to begin to see that with things like the Tea Party movement.
Do you think that Newt could actually defeat Obama?
It depends whether Newt Gingrich, if Newt Gingrich were to get the nomination, whether he could defeat Obama. It depends, I think, pretty heavily on how bad the economy is in the run-up to the election. If it's bad enough, then anything is possible. But what's clear is that Newt Gingrich really brings a lot of baggage and to the race, and that he is not, despite his best efforts to portray himself as a limited government supporter, he is not he's not someone that people who support limited constitutional government should place a whole lot of hope in.
Well, would a Newt Gingrich presidency do more or less damage than former President Bush?
Well, President Bush would be tough to top. President Bush adding the prescription drug benefit, the massive expansion of entitlements, which Newt Gingrich supported, by the way, and two fairly disastrous wars. The President Bush's record is hard to top, but like somebody once said, the surprising thing about presidents is how each new one seems to improve on the record of the one who came before him. So it wasn't long before we were missing Bill Clinton in the Bush years, and there have even been some people who've missed George W. Bush in the Obama years. So it's hard to tell.
Gene Healy, thanks for joining us today on The Savage Nation.
Michael, it's been great talking to you. If anybody wants to check out my book, The Cult of the Presidency, you can view it at www.cato.org.
This is The Savage Nation. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.
This organic movement that has cropped up all over the country.
This is healthy.
They are touching a nerve.
God bless them for their spontaneity. It's an independent people coming.
What we're seeing on the streets of New York is an expression of
democracy.
We understand their frustration.
That it's about freedom of speech, the right to assemble.
We applaud their activism.
The message of the protesters is a message for establishment every place.
I think it expresses the frustrations that the American people feel.
This is freedom. This is America. This is something we ought to celebrate.
And the protesters are giving voice to a more broad-based frustration.
It's young.
Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. This is Captain Mike down at the waterfront. You can hear the gulls in the background. Been feeding them the scraps from the table. Gave them the old turkey this morning. Teddy was jumping up and down and saying, why not me, why not me? You know, I've been reading since I wrote the novel. I got sick and tired of reading, you know, websites for news stories about how bad Obama is. I mean, it's all true, but I can only take so much. So I went back to what I used to do most, which is I started reading literature. And I walked my way backwards by reading a contemporary novel, which is fairly well written. But then I got bored very quickly because they're superficial in so many ways. So I went back to Joseph Conrad, who I cut my teeth on. And it's important for me to read you a couple of paragraphs from Joseph Conrad about when a ship goes down and people die, or what would happen if a ship went down and people died. It's from a story in his fiction, The Mirror of the Sea, published way back in 1906. Now, I don't know if Joseph Conrad is taught anymore, but something you should know about Joseph Conrad is that he was born in Poland. His native language was Polish, and he learned English and became established as one of the greatest writers of the 20th century in English, to show you what you can do if you have a brain and if you have talent. And I do not believe he took education courses put out by a government that taught, English as a second language with Polish instruction. I don't believe so. I think he taught himself English. So The Mirror of the Sea was published in 1906, and it's a collection of Conrad's autobiographical reflections on man and his relationship to ships and the ocean. I found this in an old yachting magazine that I was about to, you know, throw out. It was a couple of years old, from November 2010. And I said, wait a minute, Joseph Conrad. So let me read you a paragraph for the heck of it, okay, just for a change of pace. He's talking about being on a ship, a 1,000-ton bark, I think is what it was. I can't find the exact. Here it is. Our craft, a Clyde-built bark of 1,000 tons, was rolling to the point where he thought that he'd be thrown off the mast. So they went up on the mast to see what was going on. The decks were full of water. The gears were flying, and they were still running at 10 knots an hour. And then he's up on the mast. And suddenly up there in the slings of the foreyard in the midst of our work, I felt my shoulder gripped with such force in the carpenter's powerful paw that I positively yelled with unexpected pain. The man's eyes stared close in my face and he shouted, "Look, sir, look, what's this?" pointing ahead with his other hand. At first I saw nothing. The sea was one empty wilderness of black and white hills. Suddenly, half concealed in the tumult of the foaming rollers, I made out a wash. Something enormous rising and falling, something spread out like a burst of foam, but with a more bluish, more solid look. It was a piece of an ice floe, melted down to a fragment, but still big enough to sink a ship and floating lower than any raft right in our way, as if ambushed among the waves with murderous intent. There was no time to get down on the deck. I shouted from aloft till my head was ready to split. I was heard aft, and we managed to clear the sunken floe, which had come all the way from the southern ice cap, to have a try at our unsuspecting lives. Had it been an hour later, nothing could have saved the ship, for no eye could have made out in the dusk that pale piece of ice swept over by the white-crested waves. And as we stood near the taffrail, side by side, my captain and I, looking at it, hardly discernible already, but still quite close to on our quarter, he remarked in a meditative tone, "But for the turn of that wheel just in time, there would have been another case of a missing ship." Now, ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, I'm going to read you the last paragraph, because this now goes to you, whether you are on a ship or in a car, whether you're sitting in a house or rotting in a jail cell, because it's so universal in its description of what happens when a human dies. Listen how he ends this little tale. "Nobody ever comes back from a missing ship to tell how hard was the death of the craft and how sudden and overwhelming the last anguish of her men. Nobody can say with what thoughts, with what regrets, with what words on their lips they died. But there is something fine in the sudden passing away of these hearts from the extremity of struggle and stress and tremendous uproar, from the vast unrestful rage of the surface to the profound peace of the depths, sleeping untroubled since the beginning of ages. Now that's writing, that's literature, that's Joseph Conrad, an excerpt from The Mirror of the Sea. Very nice, Michael. Applauding for myself. It's such a, you know, this is such an isolated profession. It's incomprehensible. It's one thing if you do it in front of a live audience. You do it on a radio show. You don't even know if anyone went to sleep. Did anyone enjoy that? Or you would rather I never read literature again? Just that Obama's no good. Them Dems are commies. No, I mean, it's all true, but how much can I do of it? There's only a limit to it. I just wrote out my order of food for the night for this week, an Atlantic smoked salmon, bagels, 4 dolmas, and a small milk for the missus when she comes over for the coffee. Humble guy, go out in the boat. I'm not going to hit an ice floe this weekend in the Bay Area. Don't worry about it. Here's a guy in his 162-foot yacht showing off with his young girlfriend with the fake boob job, making memories with his girlfriend and President Joe and his wife, Jean. Some men live for this, to have the big boat and the picture of them with the young girlfriend. 4 years later, click, click. 2 years later, they got a half a baby between them. The yacht she owns, she took the yacht. Oh, guys, will they ever learn? There's no beating it. Don't you understand there's no beating life? Marrying a young woman when you're that age, is like hitting an ice floe. No matter which way it is, you're going to get hit with that ice floe, whether it's initially or late. Take a look at Mel Gibson. Don't they understand it? Don't you understand that love was invented in the Middle Ages during the Renaissance, that there was no love before that? Hey, shall I tell you my cynical view of love? Because it's true. See, America lives in a fantasy, which is beautiful. We all share in this social construct. All of our social constructs, we all share in them or negate them, but we all share in them one way or the other, either by believing them or negating them. Love is a social construct that, according to my reading of literature, did not exist prior to the period that Shakespeare wrote in. In other words, I'm not saying everyone was a caveman before then, but they married for reasons other than, oh my God, she's my soulmate, and I met her on 48th and 3rd Avenue when I was out walking my terrier, and she's my soulmate. There never was a thing called a soulmate. The religious Jews who I knew many years ago taught their children that you marry someone for other reasons and you learn to love each other. That's the way they pick. They pick based upon family lineage and the ability to raise a family and things of that nature. And then when the couple lives together, they learn to love each other. Usually the marriage lasts longer than if you, oh my God, met her in the, oh my God, 90 days later already, that they got a half a baby each. And they don't understand why the marriage didn't last. Because what you did was you married a fantasy. Nobody can live up to a fantasy. It was like based upon what you ate that day and like the alignment of the planets. So, see, the whole concept has to be changed. And I think we're going to go into arranged marriages very soon in America all over again. Now, I'm pretty sure we're going to head there. I have a whole other theory about social behavior that's coming, that's emerging in my head, which is that we're living through one of the most libertine ages in American history where everybody's doing it like bees and like bugs. Bees and bugs. Human beings are now mating in the Western world like bees and bugs. So what's going to happen, and I don't know when, how many years, my suspicion is that there's going to be an emerging generation that is the opposite of this lascivious, do-it-in-the-road type of generation. And I think we're going to go back to an almost Victorian sensibility with regard to sexuality. That's what I think is going to happen in this country. I don't mean tomorrow. I mean, I'll be laughed out of the theater if I said it was going to happen in the next few years. It's not happening in the next few years, but it is going to happen in this country. There's going to be a movement away from the why not do it in the road mentality. Now, if you care to comment on it, I'm not the right guy to call. Take it up with your priest or your psychiatrist. I got nothing more to say on it. I just felt like sharing after reading Joseph Conrad. Because of all that beautiful writing by Conrad, I want to go back to one line in there that struck me worthy of reading to you on the air and taking up your valuable time. And he's talking about nobody ever comes back from a missing ship, okay? Now listen to this, the last anguish of her men. Nobody can say with what thoughts, with what regrets, with what words on their lips they died. And I said to myself, boy, is that universal. because that talks to all of us. So when I went to high school, for example, if they taught us Joseph Conrad, who we read, by the way, in Jamaica High School, the teacher explained to us why he was considered one of the great writers of the 20th century. It's because he could write a novel that was a good story, and within the story there were universal truths, the truths that people could relate to, whether they were at sea or not at sea. Nobody can say with what thoughts, with what regrets, and with what words on the lips they died. Isn't that true for you? Doesn't that also speak to you? You think you're not going to die that way? You think you're not, or I'm not going to die in the same exact way, with thoughts and regrets and words on my lips as I die? We're all going to die with unfulfilled promise and unrequited dreams. And again, this goes to a social point I was trying to make on this show. The myth and the fantasy put out by the news / entertainment media is so overwhelming that they have the entire population hoodwinked into believing that if only you were a slut like Lindsay Lohan, or only if you were a degenerate like one of the Hollywood, you know, gigolos running around, you'd be happy like them. It's absurd. They're not happy. They're on drugs and they're in rehab, in and out of rehab and drugs. Why? Because their lifestyle is unfulfilling. Don't you understand it? They're trying to beat the rap. You can't beat the rap, man. The rap is life. The Buddhists have it right. The Buddhists say it's a wheel. It's the wheel of suffering. And the day you accept the fact that you are put on this earth to suffer is the day you'll suffer less.
Savage.